This podcast is supported by Washington.org. Washington, D.C. offers visitors so much to explore. Just ask Dayo, who shared her experiences from a recent visit.
What was your favorite food all weekend?
The Ethiopian food at Sihei.
And the first place you would visit again?
The bookstore, Little District Books.
What did you appreciate the most?
Really just like the genuine kindness of everyone that I encountered this weekend.
Why should people visit D.C.?
Well, D.C. is a place with such a thriving culture.
Washington, D.C. has something for everybody. Plan your next trip at Washington.org.
Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, a.k.a. Chapo Trop House, your source for music, news, and criticism. I'm your host, John Caramonica. Like a fool, I went and stayed too long. I'm wondering if your love's still strong. Ooh, baby, here I am, signed, sealed, delivered, I'm yours. Then that time I went and said goodbye. Now I'm back and not ashamed to cry. Oh, dear. Okay. We are listening to Signed, Sealed, Delivered, and I, Wesley, and Joe are yours.
Oh, that's so nice, John.
It's Thank you. Totally true. We're opening with that song because Signed, Sealed, Delivered back in 2008 into 2009 became a regular on the Obama campaign trail and sort of a ongoing, almost virtual rallying cry for the Barack Obama presidential campaign up until when he took office. Today on Popcast, we're going to talk about Barack Obama's musical legacy in terms of taste, in terms of finding political meaning and cultural product, and in terms of his own musical performance from time to time. I am joined by Wesley Morris, New York Times critic at large.
Hello.
Yes. Welcome to The Riff.
Oh, yeah.
And Joe Coscarelli, New York Times pop music reporter.
Fired up, ready to go.
Wesley, you wrote something that appeared in Thursday's paper, and you spoke a little bit about how Barry's fluency with pop culture, broadly speaking, not just music, was integral to his presentation of his presidency. And if you can talk a little bit about the Aretha Franklin thing that you mentioned, which I think is an interesting starting point for us, the Remnick quote, the quote to the Remnick New Yorker piece.
Basically, December of 2015, Carole King is honored by the Kennedy Center Honors. She sits up in the balcony. They bring out some whoever's playing Carole King now in Beautiful, or whoever was playing it then. I don't know what the how they cycle through these women.
Sure. It's a demanding job.
It seems like, have you seen Beautiful, by the way?
I haven't, but you need a new Carole King every so often, I'd imagine.
They're not recovered from Jesse Mueller, who was excellent.
Super sidebar.
Tangent.
This really is The Riff.
And they end this bit from Beautiful, and you just think, oh, this is it. This is very nice. This is a very fitting tribute to Carole King. Let's bring on George Lucas, please. It's not over. They like wheel out this piano, and seated upon the piano is Aretha Franklin and the longest fur coat I've ever seen.
To be
in
fair,
my life.
Not on top of the piano.
No, sorry. At
it's
the piano.
Not Mariah. We're not talking about Mariah.
Seated at the piano is Aretha Franklin.
Yes.
She is playing. She's doing Natural Woman as you would expect her to do.
Slaying.
This is the amazing thing. She starts, she's like in her low register, and she does the first bar, and then you get an oh. I maybe like the second one, Lord, you make me feel so uninspired. And then when she goes, you know, and I'm no longer doubtful, and she hits this register, and then it's like almost immediately, actually, I don't even think that it's that far in, but you see Carole King turn around, and she just whispers to, I think, her husband, and she's like, she basically, what I'm thinking she's saying is, she sounds way better than I thought she was going to. Mm-hmm. I'm into this. Mm-hmm. And Michelle and Barack Obama are seated to her left.
Yeah, our consumers in chief.
Right. Well, that's a great way to think about them. It's quite clear that Aretha, I don't know when the last time anybody had seen her perform at this point. Mm-hmm. Everybody's Obama-related memory of her was the America the Beautiful performance where she had the hat on and
the
didn't sound that great. But, you know,
how
again, another sidebar, I hate to do this, but like divas, you know you shouldn't be singing in the cold, so don't do it. You can't do it. So Aretha finishes the song, and she is electric. She is fantastic. She burns down the Kennedy Center.
Stands up, drops the fur.
Takes off the fur to finish her run through the song. The world got a chill. I felt the earth shake a little bit in my apartment. And so David Remnick, I don't know what possessed him to sort of to move on with this, but like a lot of people, if you're an Aretha fan and you always root for her to sound as good as she used to sound, you know, there's a kind of, it's not even nostalgia, it's just like belief. And singing is just one of those things, like Larry Bird is never going to do Larry Bird thing again. Aretha Franklin can still do something like what Aretha has always done.
Sure.
He goes and writes this piece, and he does what initially seemed to me to be the most obnoxious thing you could do.
A light flex.
Right.
It's not light. It's not light.
He's bench pressing like 350.
Yeah. No. This is more than a light flex.
And his line is, when I emailed Barack Obama... I'm like, seriously, dude, really?
Maybe, hey, look, we don't know. Maybe he just, didn't you just read that article in the magazine about the White House mail office? Maybe he just emailed info@whitehouse.gov and someone put a red dot on it and took it straight to his office. You don't know.
But it doesn't matter. Yes. Like, but the point.
Can I read this quote?
Oh, sure.
So
wait, I didn't say that he wrote back.
Yes.
Barack wrote back.
Needless to say.
President Obama. Wrote back to David Remnick. They have a rapport. It's not like a shock that he did it. If one of us had sent him a note being like, yeah.
We just need a secondary quote.
I just hit him on the two-way. I don't email. You know what I mean? So here's the reply, which if you are a working music critic, should literally embarrass the life out of you, and you should quit and go back to grad school and become like a marketing specialist or something, because this is better than your whole career.
Yep.
Here's the line. Nobody embodies more fully the connection between the African-American spiritual, the blues, R&B, rock and roll, the way that hardship and sorrow were transformed into something full of beauty and vitality and hope. American history wells up when Aretha sings. That's why when she sits down at a piano and sings A Natural Woman, she can move me to tears. The same way that Ray Charles's version of American Beautiful will always be, in my view, the most patriotic piece of music ever performed, because it captures the fullness of the American experience, the view from the bottom as well as the top, the good and the bad, and the possibility of synthesis, reconciliation, transcendence.
Oh, stop.
Yo, seriously.
Just dash that off on the iPhone. Sent from my iPhone.
It's Mr. Take Your Job coming through with the fire fuego take on Aretha Franklin.
I don't know. I've never forgotten that. I will never forget that.
He did this same thing in the Leonard Cohen profile where he got Bob Dylan to provide the secondary. Yeah. And Dylan, again, just killed it. Just wrote better than any current
scholar
music criticism.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And just like perfect... specific scholarship about the way Leonard Cohen uses melody. So Remnick, you know, some guys have all the luck.
Right. And the instinct too, right? I mean, it would never even have occurred to me to ask the president. I mean, he was physically present and it was a sort of scene of the crime situation. Mm. Like, where were you the night Aretha, like, you know, brought down the house?
Again.
But this is also why, I mean, you would not ask this of, say, George W. Bush. You would not ask this of Jimmy Carter.
That's a good point.
You would not ask this of Richard Nixon, except maybe about film, I guess.
Right.
But this is something where the outsized part of the imagination, the American imagination, that the Obamas, broadly speaking, and Barack Obama specifically, occupies, takes in cultural connoisseurship. It takes in artistic and creative excellence. It takes in black excellence. All of those things he is... a complete authority on, not just a symbol of, but an authority on.
Right.
So obviously, like, why would, like, you know, like, of course, like, whoever, when I profile
Chance the Rapper,
Ty Dolla Sign, no, Ty Dolla, Ty Dolla. When I profile Ty Dolla Sign, I'm a hit. The info@barackobama.com and see what
comes
back.
Well, he'll be even freer now to take that.
Yeah.
And I mean, obviously what we're seeing in that quote on one hand is Barack Obama, the writer, which has been well established.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But for our purposes, I think what the discussion we're having today, what we're seeing is Barack Obama, the music fan and scholar.
And scholar. I mean, this is the thing. I mean, for those of us who write about culture professionally, I feel like a thing that you're often forced to push up against in the outer world is, oh, what is the value? What is the value of taking arts seriously? What is the value of taking popular culture seriously? And so there's something very validating to have a president, this high authoritative figure, not just want to speak about Syria or immigration or, you know, mortgage rates, but who also understands the value of delivering a completely hot take.
Right.
On Aretha Franklin.
And virtuosity means something to him, too.
Yeah.
I don't know. What's interesting to me is how could he be the first president to have this kind of relationship to popular culture?
I guess Bill Clinton, maybe?
No.
Kind of, sort of?
No.
It's a little different. He could hang,
right.
But he wasn't going to set the terms.
Right.
You saying Bill Clinton is La La Land?
I didn't say.
Oh, man. When's that show happening?
Oh.
Well, let me ask you guys a question. Let's take it back, like, to, you know, we started on Science Sealed Delivered. When did you first realize that Barack Obama was this sort of music consumer and fan? And
okay, well, I know there's the answer to that, but it's also the exact same moment where I realized he was a dad. And that's when he called Kanye a jackass.
Right. So that's what's that, 2009?
It's 2009. The fact that you're informed enough about Kanye to know that he could be a jackass, but not cool enough to understand that that's the sort of métier
that he operates in. Yeah,
like,
sure.
But the fact that he's even that far along down the arc was when you're thinking, like, oh, okay, Barry, I see.
And that was a real opinion,
yeah,
too.
It was like an actual considered opinion.
And if I remember correctly, it was sort of like a hot mic moment.
Yeah.
Like, it was before the interview. It was before the interview.
I thought it was a TV interview.
Yeah, it was a television interview.
Okay.
It was before when they're, like, miking him up.
So
I
David
think,
Samuels
and
was not there for American Mozart. He was not present for the jackass.
I think he just used it in the piece.
Yeah, but I don't think it was.
Oh, very disingenuous, David.
DMD.
I can't
yo,
be sure come about
see,
that.
Yo, come
but
see
I,
us.
I,
come
I
see
have
us
this memory. I have a memory of the scene where he's like basically getting mic'd up for a TV interview, and someone's like, "That Taylor Swift thing. What do you think?" And
yes.
That's why he throws off
right.
the casual term.
Right. Yes.
That's the first moment where the idea that the president could be a voracious consumer.
Mm.
And a thoughtful consumer really entered my mind. It's not something that had happened at any point previously.
And Wesley, did you have a similar experience?
Mine was probably the inauguration.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how the setting up of that event works. I don't know who really is responsible for having whom come do mm-hmm. what. But there was always something inspired in there in terms of who they were choosing to serenade them.
Yeah. And Beyonce performs at the first inauguration.
Right. And not only does she perform, she doesn't do Crazy in Love. Which, you know, she could have.
Maybe after 2012, she could have done Crazy in
right.
Love.
You know?
Not the first time.
Got me but, feeling patriotic right now.
But, you know, she does at last.
Right.
Not really a song I want to hear Beyonce sing, but oh, come on. Listen, she did a great job. What
she
I'm
did a
saying
really good
is,
job.
You wouldn't
I
have
wouldn't
picked
have
it.
Picked it last for her to right. sing.
But there is, but that also plays into the kind of, especially in that era of Beyonce, her conservatism manifests in different ways
sure.
at different points through her group, but that made very clear to me that there was this fundamental conservatism underneath whatever pop extravagance she was delivering at that stage in her
also,
career.
She could be for hire to the most excellent bidder.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, that's also a song that if you want to hear it last and you want to hear, like, not a current person, but, like, somebody who had some currency and still kind of does in a way, you call Christina. You know, damn. You call Xtina and you get her to do it. But
it was
that's
a different
not,
era.
That's
it was a different
this,
era. Can you, early 2009.
Also, can you imagine Christina Aguilera 2009 performing? At the, nah.
I'm just saying there is an out of touch version of this scenario that results in Christina Aguilera singing at last sure. at the inauguration.
Sure. Kelly Clarkson.
Kelly Clarkson's a good number two.
She could have done it.
Right. She really could have done
yeah,
it.
Yeah, for sure.
Just, well, that's not front.
No, not at all. She has
but
the range.
Having Beyonce do it was kind of a left field choice. It did speak to people who were presumably fans of her.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe daughters who were fans of her. I don't know.
They were very young at that
right.
point.
Mm-hmm. I just knew that it was going to be an interesting time at the White House.
And mm-hmm. it sort of it presaged this what ended up being a pretty constant relationship between Jay-Z and Beyonce and the president and the first lady, which lasted throughout their...
And also predates this, because this is Obama, you know, brushing dirt off his shoulder.
Right, and I think that was probably my realization, which is like, this isn't just like the youngish politician like pretending to be cool with the kids, like mm-hmm. just the fluency with which he brushed mm-hmm. his shoulders off but in the 08 primary.
But it's also a dad. I mean, it's also...
It's a dad move.
It's a wild
but
dad
it's
move.
Not a contrived... It's not a market tested... It's not passed yep. down or up, excuse me, from mm. interns. Like, people would think it was funny if you...
You mean it's not generated by an office of meme generators on staff?
I don't think so. It didn't have that. It didn't have that vibe.
He also has talked so many times about how he really rejects that relationship to your staff, where you're trying to read their minds and pick their brains.
Vampiric.
Right. The Selena Meyer way of running, sure. being yeah. a president.
Hillary Clinton.
I feel like Barack Obama was really always himself and trying to figure out how to become more himself mm-hmm. as the two terms went on. I mean, and this is true in pretty much all matters, right? Not just music, but policy, social politics.
Mm-hmm. This reminds me, I was watching, I guess it was on CNN yesterday because it was on Desus and Mero last night, so it was probably on CNN earlier in the day.
Yeah.
Whoever the token Trump commentator on CNN, who's like the young blonde woman, I forget her name.
Oh.
Not Kellyanne.
No. Like the one who's like the fake.
Oh, on
the
CNN.
Fake Tommy Long.
Sure, sure.
Whoever that is, basically said about the inauguration, today's inauguration, that she's happy that Toby Keith is the one performing and not someone like Beyonce. Like, you know, like, and literally every other person on the panel is like, Wagwan? Like, really? But it reminds me that there has always been a sort of, I don't know if it's small or large, but a loud anti-Beyonce faction, especially amongst conservatives.
Oh, sure.
And so choosing Beyonce... Even
you,
doing
you
a
mean always or like
I
since...
think it dates. I think it dates back, and I think this might be part
oh,
of
because
why
because of the inauguration.
It might be part of
oh,
why. I don't
so
know. I don't know. I'm sort of toying with that. I don't remember the degree of the backlash, but I remember there being at least some kind of why would you have this pop singer of potentially dubious morals or you know sonic morals performing
oh
at this exalted sacred event.
The reason that it was so exciting also was. And this might just be, I mean, no, I'm not just making this up. Like, this had never happened before.
Mm.
I actually thought this. I remember exactly where I was when I had this thought, watching the two of them dance and hearing her sing. I thought, oh, the White House is for everybody.
Yep.
And it was Beyonce. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It wasn't like my aunt wasn't singing at last.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It was Beyonce. But I actually thought, that's right. These two people have the option to open this up to anybody they want. They can have anybody in here to do anything mm-hmm. at any time.
Okay, well, speaking of that, the next couple of years, I feel like what's happening in the Obama administration is this slow testing of the waters of what can the White House do. The White House doesn't have a defined shape. It can be shaped any way that the president deems it can be shaped.
Right.
At least culturally, theoretically.
According to that president. But not.
Yes.
I mean, but the nation still I mean,
views it that
if
way.
I was thinking that. Can you imagine what
mm-hmm.
everybody else had been brainwashed to think, too?
In 2009, at the White House Poetry Jam.
Wait, stop.
Your man.
Stop.
No.
Let's just say it again.
The White House Poetry Jam.
That happened.
The White House
More than once.
Multiple poetry jams.
Can I just say? Okay, so the White House Poetry Jam, your man Lin-Manuel Miranda did his opening song from Hamilton for the first time before Hamilton was a thing.
He
was testing it out.
Yes.
And in 2011, at another White House Poetry Jam, Common performs, and this was a source of much conservative consternation, because Lord knows
conservatives haven't seen Gap commercials from the early 2000s.
Common.
Yes.
No.
You don't remember this?
No.
Oh man, no. Fox News went in.
See, I don't F with them. I can't do it.
No.
I don't want to know.
No,
I
just, Fox News came out banging.
Because
over Common, who was wearing a suit in that performance.
Police violence, probably, he alluded to in some song.
No, I think
song.
It's maybe like an anti-Bush lyric in the song Letter to the Law.
There you go.
We're not going to play Letter to the Law because, like, why? Let's just not. Yeah, let's do us all a favor. But let's listen to a little bit of Lin-Manuel trying out Hamilton at the White House Poetry Jam.
How does a bastard orphan son of a whore and a Scotsman dropped in the middle of a forgotten spot in the Caribbean by Providence, impoverished in squalor, grow up to be a hero and a scholar? The $10 founding father without a father got a lot farther by working a lot harder, by being a lot smarter, by being a self-starter. By 14, they had placed him in charge of the trade and charter. And every day while slaves were being slaughtered or carted away across the waves, our Hamilton kept his guard up.
Okay, so that's your man Lin-Manuel throwing down for the Obamas with this unlikely concept for a musical based on the life of Alexander Hamilton. When you put that and the Common thing side by side, this is where you're starting to see, Wesley, what you're referring to is an expansion of what the White House can contain culturally.
But carefully.
But and soft.
And it's the same as having Beyoncé, but then having her sing At Last.
Yes.
It's a similar instinct,
right.
I think.
But if Fox News is going crazy over Common, then you need to get Wu-Tang up in there immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Because it doesn't matter.
And we did see this eventually, but
right.
as
yes.
all things Barack Obama... It took a while.
Right.
All in good time.
He's always playing the long game, people. 18 holes, not two.
Yeah. I'm more like 36.
Yeah. In a day.
Like, can you imagine the meeting where you decide that it's Common?
Right.
Like, you know, how
the
many
safest
people,
possible.
How many people are on the list in front of Common?
Sure.
You know, you can't do Jay. You can't do Kanye. It's like, but Common, you know, he's from Chicago. He has a social conscience. He's very declarative in his raps.
The right rapper, unquote,
right.
for that.
And frankly, in an era where being the right rapper was like not a thing.
Not at all.
No,
2011
and hip-hop is in this
was not.
I mean, it's transitioning.
Now, yeah, that's
right.
different now. But
right.
in 2011, when that happened, it's not like Common was popping.
No.
It's not like, Common's right, and he's the right kind of MC, but also he's the most popular guy out. If anything, you would say he was at his least popular. From a pure hip hop perspective, but he had some functionality for Barry, and so they brought Common in. And Joe, we were talking the other day about how this really sort of sets the table for what eventually happens,
right?
In
which
Obama's
is
White House.
A broadening of the taste,
the BET Hip Hop Awards.
Wesley says in his piece,
I'm pretty sure the cipher with Jadakiss and Fabolous was recorded in the East Room. I'm like 95% sure of that.
But we don't know. That's just the thing.
Could be.
It could be.
Could be.
But why don't we compare what we saw then in 2008, 2009, 2010 to the more recent rappers who have been invited to the White House. We're cutting out a chunk of time here,
but I think it's instructive.
Yes.
President Obama has an initiative called My Brother's Keeper that he was looking to seed in the hip-hop community to have a bunch of medium well-known rappers go out and promote the initiative on his behalf. So there is a photo that was on DJ Khaled's Instagram, which is, I think, at the end of this meeting, and at this meeting were Pusha T, Wale, Ludacris in a sweatshirt. Come on, bro.
Busta,
Khaled,
Rick Ross.
Ross, J. Cole.
Nicki.
Is Nicki there?
Nicki was there.
Nicki was there?
Was
it? Alicia Keys, Nicki. And this was 2000. When was this?
Last year.
This is last year.
Yeah.
Nicki, yeah, this is like last
Nicki
spring.
Was there. There's another big person.
G-Eazy? No, G-Eazy wasn't there. No one invited G-Eazy. Sorry. Just wondering.
No, but it was a good group of people.
But it was not quite all-star. Like, this is the thing. Right. It's like, it's not Jay. It's not Drake. Oh, Drake's Canadian, so it's, maybe.
But you are getting sort of representative swath of commercial
radio rap.
Legit,
commercial rap.
Yes.
And that includes ex-drug dealers.
Yeah.
People who pretended to be ex-drug dealers. You have your sort of more family-friendly guys like J. Cole, mm-hmm. who would still scandalize Fox News, mm-hmm. regardless of his relatively wholesome output.
Mm-hmm.
Swizz Beatz was there.
Swizz Beatz definitely there. Yeah.
Former Rough Rider affiliate.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just you're getting a real mix of people and unapologetically, right? He's saying we can welcome these people to talk about the futures of young black men in this country. And we're just not going to listen to what Rush Limbaugh has to say about
right.
it
I mean,
anymore.
To be fair, this is definitely second semester senior year.
Yes.
Like, this is Barry just on some, we're just having everybody over.
Without a doubt.
Yes.
Like, everybody's cousins can come. Yes. Like, not just
But I
cousins.
Mean, thank God. I mean, I think this is the thing about the way the country worked under Obama, which was, this is not a surprise, but it didn't matter what he did optically. It just, if he was seen with another black person anything,
mm-hmm.
commenting on anything that a black person did.
It triggered someone.
It was just, we were suddenly, it was 1861.
Right. The beer summit.
Just commenting that James Crowley might have found another way to deal with Henry Louis Gates mm-hmm. on his porch. The firestorm that begat was terrible. I mean, think about this. This is a person who had figured out how to be an African-American man,
mm-hmm.
was then suddenly elected to the highest office in the land, and then had to discover a way to be a African-American man in public in a country that was deeply skeptical of his blackness in the first place. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was the camp that elected him to be the blackest ever president. I don't know what they were watching on the campaign trail, but,
mm-hmm.
oops. And they also expected him, there were also people who expected him to be the most raceless black person you could possibly elect. They wanted they thought they were voting for Herman Cain. And so when...
Wesley.
No, excuse me.
Wesley.
Yes, they were.
Come on,
they, listen.
I give you a lot of latitude.
Listen, there are people for whom the mere idea of him doing anything,
of course,
being married. I mean, as you might remember, being married to Michelle was too much.
Yeah. So I guess the
what
question.
What am I not giving somebody credit
here's the,
for?
I think the question. This actually begs a question, which is, to what degree was Obama's embrace of black cultural life shaped by perceived or actual opposition to his actual blackness
in the White House?
Yeah, yeah.
I would say a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
And does it change first term to second term? Because I think it changes.
Oh, it definitely changes.
Yeah.
Everything changes second term.
Yeah.
I mean, just from a policy standpoint, mm-hmm. things changed. He was much more interested in using the power of his office to make things happen than a Congress totally opposed to him would mm-hmm. never allow to mm-hmm. happen. And I think that went all the way down to who he invited to the White House.
Yes.
My only point with the Herman Cain point, which I don't back away from, I mean, I was being facetious, but there was a belief that in electing this man, all this race stuff would go away. When he realized that it didn't matter how many commons he invited to the White House, it was too racial for people.
Right.
I think that was the point at which he was just like,
the hell
with
it. Yeah.
I can't make these people happy.
And one first term thing that always sticks in my mind is when Obama had a birthday party, I think in 2011, and among the invitees were Jay-Z and maybe
yes.
Common was probably invited.
Yes.
And
Common
Chris,
was around.
Chris Rock was there, and the Fox News online headline was
yep.
Obama's hip hop barbecue didn't create jobs.
Oh, it's a fire. entire headline.
And that was the sort of thing that we were dealing with.
Get that person
at that moment. That he was having, that just by inviting black people to his birthday party,
he was
having a hip-hop barbecue.
Well, yeah.
And that he was, you know, fiddling as Rome burned.
Well, also, maybe that was a hip-hop. I mean, you know, sounds like a great hip-hop barbecue, to be honest. It sounds actually kind of hot.
But I mean,
and probably did create jobs in the music.
But they were probably playing edited songs at that hip-hop barbecue. Oh, we'll just put it that way.
You don't think they got parental advisory on there?
That's a great point.
Is it too late for me to make the joke that this podcast is brought to us by Godfather's Pizza?
We were doing so well.
I'm sorry. The things that passed for crises in Obama's first term, by the time he wins re-election, I think, Wesley, what you're saying is right, which is that it's just like, the hell with it.
Well, it's the thing that every black person learns at some point. It's like, you know, I'm going to play by your rules and make sure you don't give me a hard time, and I'm going to get that raise and get that job and get that loan, and everything's going to be good. And the minute you make one teeny tiny little mistake, or somebody misperceives something,
or they change the rules,
or the rules get changed, right? It's all over, and you realize, oh, I guess this is rigged. It doesn't matter what I do.
So do you think that
might as well have Lil Yachty come on down?
That
sounds
great. Do you
think this realization dovetailed with Obama the Black Performer coming out when we're speaking about his
musical legacy?
You mean
in terms of his actual singing?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because just timing wise, you know, as we're looking down this timeline, like once we start to get into
There's the 2012 Apollo fundraiser,
sure,
where he sings a little bit of "Let's Stay Together."
And this is
in
the lead up to the
that was the first
election,
right? The lead up to to his reelection. There's also a moment which I was unaware of until I was digging around, where he sings "Sweet Home Chicago" with B.B. King,
which is a nice video. Look it up on the YouTube.
Get it in your YouTubes. Also, Obama slow jamming the news.
Right.
It's been an honor and a privilege to serve as your president over the past 8 years. When I first took office, our nation was facing one of the worst recessions in its history. Since then, we've added more than 14 million new jobs and lowered the unemployment rate to under 5%. Through the actions of my administration, we were able to stimulate the economy and get our country back on track.
Oh, yeah. President Obama stimulated long-term growth.
Yeah. Sort of like I publicly acknowledging the ridiculousness of his position.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And embracing it.
All with these elements of dad in them, but then bits that are genuinely cool that you're like, he's at the Apollo singing not bad.
Right. And that's not something we've experienced, again, outside of maybe a Bill Clinton playing saxophone on Arsenio. It's not something we've experienced. But this is really this sort of fluency in really the black cultural expression of the soul era. Because we've had these hip-hop moments, but this is, I'd venture to say, Obama's true cultural allegiances is to that era.
Well, you know, this is a sidebar or side note. Holder's situation, right? Eric Holder, former Attorney General Eric Holder. Was a DJ for like years.
Is that right?
A DJ in the Obama wheelhouse. He's older than Obama, but you know, if you ask him like what he was playing, he'd be like the Bar Gays.
Sure.
Because of course. But I like if I were president, like what would I be doing at the Apollo? I'd be doing Sherelle. Because that's
I cannot wait until this happens. Wesley 2020.
Yeah, hell
this
yeah.
This is where I am. Mm-hmm. I'm doing Angela Beaufil, Sherelle, and Chaka Khan.
Good Lord.
That's what I'm doing.
Wow.
But I remember before the Let's Stay Together moment, I didn't know Obama had a voice.
Well, can we talk about this for a second?
Yeah.
You're saying he doesn't?
I'm saying it's way better than I thought
it
was.
Right.
But it's not as good as I think people who want to say it's good.
But
say
this
it is
the beautiful thing about him, right? Like, I don't know if you guys have this, but I like to sing. Now, I can't sing, but I love doing it.
Do you do karaoke?
All the time.
Really?
Yeah, I do it.
What's your go-to? One song?
Yeah, just sidebar.
Raspberry Beret.
All right.
I for real do it almost. Now, I've got other things I like to do.
Wow. I just feel like we have to really do a whole different podcast on this.
But what I'm saying is like there is, and it's kind of involuntary with me. I am overcome with the desire to sing. Now, I've never been him.
So you're La La Land.
Wow. You know
Thanks
what,
for
Joe?
Listening to Music Man in the Boom
this
Room.
This is a big table.
Oh, man.
And you're a lucky MF.
I'm just saying.
You know what? I'm going to take that
singing
back.
In your room.
If I'm John Legend, that would be
sexy,
then yes.
He's a sexy MF?
I can do sexy MF.
I bet.
I can do anything. It doesn't sound that good.
You're talking about your tendency to break into song, and I can relate to that, you know, in my car, in my apartment, but this is the president of the United States.
This is the thing. Okay, let's talk, but this is actually useful. Karaoke is useful. Why do people perform karaoke? I believe that part of the reason you perform karaoke is to develop community with people who may feel not connected to you in a particular moment, and you want to use your gift for cultural expression to bring other people into your space or to let those people know that you're in their space.
Yes.
And I feel that of all the times that I have seen Barack Obama sing in public, it has always been to telegraph a sense of belonging, both his belonging to the black cultural experience, his belonging to the black church, all of those things.
It's downness. It is, and it's not the performance of downness. It is just a performance. It is the expression of and the communication of downness. I am with you. We are together. I feel you.
And but also just a creation of a safe space.
But just as easily as it could unite, if he was legitimately bad, it could divide.
Barack Obama would never do it.
Right.
That's what I'm saying.
He's just good enough. He's just good enough.
And like, yes, if I were president and I was like, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, you know, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what would happen. But I mean,
well, first of all, I would put on my Alexander O'Neill suit. That's what would happen.
Oh, when I think about
let's
you.
Let's get it. That's all right, fine. I'll do
my
karaoke.
Feelings
Here's
can
the thing.
Explain
I will do karaoke if
why
we can do
after all
Alexander
this
O'Neill
time,
and Jarrell. I will
my
if we
heart
can do that.
Still feels pain.
I'm just going to go ahead and say if you did that on stage at the Apollo, it would not go as well for you as it went for Mr. Barack Obama.
It wouldn't. Also, he's just smooth. And the thing about him is when he does this, he is in full possession of, if not his voice, then like the reason he is doing it.
Presidential authority.
Yes, and to see that authority used to sing Al Green is all that office should be about.
But okay, so that brings us to what I think is obviously the most crucial and potent use of music in the Barack Obama administration, which is when the president sang Amazing Grace at the memorial service for the victims of the Charleston church shooting. And before we talk about it, I would like to basically play that in full because
it's beautiful.
Yes. And I'm sure when I listen back to this, I will weep as I do every single time that I hear this.
Amazing Grace. Amazing Grace. Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me.
Wesley, you wrote a little bit about that moment in your piece, and I wrote about it at the time.
I remember that. It was beautiful.
Thank you. I'll get the sort of music criticism part of this out of the way, which is like, he really does sing like he's lecturing. He really does sing like a professor. There is a...
Well, he takes that pause.
Yes, there's pauses, and also his syllables are really declarative.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're very...
Mm-hmm.
That's the way that he hits a syllable. There's not a lot of you'll forgive the term. There's not a lot of grace between the syllables,
mm-mm.
but it's very effective. It's interesting. When I read what you wrote, I'm curious, do you think that he went into that not knowing he was going to sing? Because I think he emphatically knew.
I mean, he might have known he was going to do it beforehand, but there's something about the uncertainty about whether he should do it that comes through. Is a confidence there, but there's also just that deliberative moment where it's not should I or shouldn't I, but he is waiting for the thing to come to him to get him to do it.
Mm-hmm.
He knows that if he's going
to
do it,
to be carried by the way,
he has to feel it in order for it to happen.
And he does build up to it. Like there is the thing right before where he's like, amazing grace. Few seconds.
Yes.
Amazing grace.
And so.
And then he stopped.
Yes.
And then it's the waves.
So Valerie Jarrett spoke about this at some point afterwards. And she, as she recalled it, they were on Marine One, the helicopter leaving for South Carolina. Michelle was there and Valerie Jarrett, you know, the Obama's closest advisor and friend. And according to her telling, he says, when I get to the second part of referring to Amazing Grace, I think I might sing. And Valerie Jarrett recalls saying,
That's how you know. And Michelle, that's how you know you have a good friend.
Yes.
Is when you're literally going to deliver a speech at a memorial service and your friend is like.
And Michelle comes in even stronger and says, why on earth would that fit in?
Oh, I love this.
And this is Valerie Jarrett's retelling of the story. Then Barack says, I don't know whether I'm going to do it, but I just wanted to warn you two that I might sing. We'll see how it feels at the time.
That's exactly what I would do. That's my relationship to singing. Listen, you guys, I don't know what's going to happen. I'd like to think maybe that I'm going to break into song. I know you think it's not a good idea, but I might not even do it. You might win, but I'm just saying. Brace yourselves.
But
think of the confidence and the spirit that must have caught him at that moment to overrule Valerie Jarrett and Michelle Obama.
Not only that, but
who
has
expressed open skepticism about the idea.
A black choir that had been already performing. He knew what they could do.
Yes.
He knew what he was standing in front of. That's the thing about
that moment. It's what he was enabling. Yeah. It's also an incredible moment to see the conflating and mixing of these two incredible institutions, the presidency of the United States and the black church.
Yep.
Which is something that has not happened prior to that, and I will venture to say will not happen subsequent to
also,
that.
Also, the marriage of two completely different approaches to gospel music as well.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
Like, if you've watched the video, he raises them up by beginning to sing. And there's one guy behind him on the rocks.
The guy with sunglasses who takes off the sunglasses?
Yes. He's like,
what? This wasn't in the program?
And the choir is like, we talked about this and we disagreed about it initially. And I'm still not sure where I stand on this. I'm much more convinced now by the holiness argument because I just think that's just more beautiful.
Of course.
But initially, I thought there was a sense that, like, not only are they going to join him, they're going to save him from whatever is about to happen. But
it's not.
We disagreed about
this.
But I've come around. I do not think that is what's happening anymore because they keep singing. I don't know. It's just
honestly.
Also, and I'm just for the record, as far as the Valerie Jarrett and Michelle Obama counter argument, I just want to say, as a veteran of many things in life and relationships, where I say I'm thinking about doing this.
You already knew.
I'm doing it. Michelle, I'm doing that. I'm just letting you know. I'm preparing you. In the same way
asking for permission.
No, in the same way I'm preparing America, I'm preparing you because I love you. And I don't want you to be all caught off guard. What'd you do, Barack?
I have to say, a lot of what President Obama wrote about Aretha Franklin could be applied to his performance here.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
No, this is, yes, exactly.
You know, as someone that writes about music for a living, I feel like I'm long past my capacity for shock and long past my capacity to break, really, break my character as a critic. But the intersections of history in that moment were far too overwhelming. I've never been more grateful to have the president that we had than in that moment.
No.
And it's I watched this last night and I cried the whole, like, I it never fails.
I get chills just talking about it right now.
It's hard to talk about. Before we do go out, I think there are a few other moments that we should touch on.
Do a little Obama lightning round?
Yeah, let's just do a speed round. Okay. So Chance the Rapper and Frank Ocean at the state dinner a few months ago. Mm-hmm. That's important. Usher secretly filming Barack Obama dancing to Hotline Bling.
That tells you so much about
open
both of
and
them.
Sleeves up. Yeah, Usher, sus. Yes. Super film. Like, that's not how you film. That's how, like,
D'Angelo Russell, Nick Young.
Yeah, that's how perverts film on the
that's
subway.
That's how NBA rookies get in trouble.
Yeah, that's not, Usher. That's not the way.
But you wanted that on your phone, though. If you're there,
I probably would have done this. Like,
it's not for the gram, though. It's not for the gram.
And can I just say, this is the other thing about Obama. He turned people like Usher into people like us.
Fans.
Yeah.
His power to transmute excellent artists and talented people into, like, idiots is just without equal.
Let's talk briefly about Michelle.
She did it too.
Yeah. Yes.
So the two signature things are obviously carpool karaoke. Mm-hmm. Where she knows more words to get your freak on than probably the three of us combined.
And is, maybe Missy Elliott.
Yeah, possibly Missy Elliott. Yeah. Missy Elliott definitely did not know all the words to get your freak on. Missy be putting it down on the hottest round. I tell your mother, what? Y'all can stop me now. Listen to me now. I'm lasting 20 rounds. And if you want me, then come on, get me now. Is you with me now? That biggie, biggie bounce. I know you didn't know why I switch my style. Holla! And then, of course, the Fallon.
Honestly, though, I know all the words to get your freak on.
Let's go.
We'll do the
now.
We'll save it for off mic.
Now go. Now go.
Do you want me to do the no
second verse? Okay. And then the Jimmy Fallon mom dance timeline where she does the Dougie, and that's an interesting moment because I hadn't watched that since it came out. But it's the last dance in a series of, like, basically race-neutral dances. And the Dougie is, like, a relatively recent black teen viral phenomena. Yes. And Jimmy Fallon walks off stage during that.
Jimmy Fallon does not do the Dougie.
Does not do the Dougie and walks off. Right. Which is an interesting public assertion of black authority and black primacy on a Jimmy Fallon show, which is really not about that outside of the roots.
Yes.
We can't get through this podcast
without talking. Going,
you know what's up. You know what's really good. Pro eras in this thing.
The first Malia Obama selfie.
Malia Obama selfie with the pro era t-shirt, the heart logo.
Joey Badass.
Oh yeah.
No one ever got to the bottom of that. I think next week.
I think there's gonna be some time.
I've had emails out for years
now.
It's time. I've left some messages.
It's time to rebump those emails.
To know where Malia got a pro-era shirt, who she sent the photo to, who leaked it, who was the Usher of this situation.
I mean,
so. But she was matched recently, maybe this past weekend or the week before, by her little sister.
Sasha out here in an OVO ball cap. Drake put it on his Instagram with the caption, "Style Popper."
And this was after she missed the farewell address in Chicago
because she had studying. Homework.
She goes to vacation in Miami. Vacation in Miami with the OVO
Sasha's
hat.
Like, more life. She's like, "Dad, you had that. I'm about this more life." That's what's up.
Iconic.
So,
So
that's the family Obama relationship with music. Our friend Doreen pointed this out on Twitter the other day, which is 2 Chainz apparently had been invited to perform at Trump's inauguration and turned it down.
Which,
who knows?
Unconfirmable.
Who knows, really?
What part is unconfirmable?
Maybe it was the invitation, the declining.
2 Chainz claims that he was invited to the inauguration.
Is that a thing now?
But this came
to say you were invited.
To say you were invited and you declined.
Yeah, but look, 2 Chainz, a man with a big heart. He looked very emotional.
But this was the coda to his Instagram video, and the first half is expressing disappointment that he had not been invited.
Right, not been invited to the White House because, like, Obama everybody's
ever.
Right.
Oh, okay. He was not in that My Brother's Keeper group photo.
No.
2 Chainz.
No Titty Boy.
Did not get
Titty Boy. 2 Chainz. Okay, let's just take it as fact for the purpose of this conversation. 2 Chainz yes. invited to play the inauguration, says no, or play some ball, says no. His heart is heavy, both because he had to turn down, I assume, a decent amount of money, but also the understanding that the symbolism of the White House and of Washington, D.C. is about to change tremendously. Wesley, tell us the question you were asking before, because it's something I've been thinking about a lot as well.
Well, just what happens to culture now?
Yeah.
Like, what happens to popular culture? It never needed a president's approval to be what it was, but when now that it's gotten it,
yeah.
and now that we
know... It's hard
to
go back.
It's hard to go back because you can see what's possible, and you feel like any alternative relationship to artistic excellence and creativity and thinking, because it wasn't just musicians, it was actors, writers... a
lot of writers.
Everybody came through the White House in every genre of music and in every genre of art, basically. It's going to feel like people are being kept out, but at the same time, nobody really wants to go in.
And they really were not in prior to this.
Right.
Apart from a few rare exceptions,
I think the larger picture thing to think about is, what does it mean to have been shown so much opportunity, to have experienced it, to have felt it, to have like imbibed it for 8 years.
Maybe that bred a certain sort of complacency. Because I think a thing that we certainly yep. spend a lot of our energy thinking about is institutional appreciation of and embrace of alternative or minority or oppositional art forms.
Right.
And here we had an 8-year run, or maybe like a 4-year run with like a 4-year light run at the top, where that wasn't nearly as much of an issue as it had been at any point in history.
Right.
That framework's gone. And maybe there's a positive side to
it. But it somehow felt oppositional, even if it was...
It's, yes.
You
yes.
know what I mean?
Still
it
felt radical.
Yes,
it still
the whole,
felt radical.
The whole
yes.
So
radical.
It wasn't so much artistic complacency and, you know, that they were sort of in the pocket of the White House. It never felt like
it was being used to evil ends and demonstrative.
And also, frankly, coincides, if we're going to talk about music specifically, coincides with a pretty fascinating cultural moment in hip-hop, which is not, I wouldn't say a revival of politically minded hip-hop or socially conscious hip-hop, like these things that became tropes in the 90s, but a revival of a hip-hop that's mildly Christian influenced, that understands that social justice is part of the aim of a contemporary black cultural production.
It's not
something that's as didactic as what we came to expect in the late 80s and early 90s, but it's just as
sure
present.
If we would have told you when Common was getting heat for coming to the White House that by the end of the Obama presidency Tip would be making music similar to Common,
yeah.
you probably wouldn't have believed it in
well,
2009.
But that went everywhere though. I mean, the sort of the feeling yourself identity awakening happened all over popular music during this administration by the second term.
Yeah.
Everybody was to use a term I'm so sick of.
Don't say it. Don't say it.
Yeah.
Don't
okay.
say it. We know what the term is.
We all knew. It's just like everybody came to their senses and was like, yeah, okay, I'm black and I'm proud. I'm going to write a record about it.
And I think the culmination of that in many ways is an artist who has a lot of direct ties to Barack Obama, and that's Chance the Rapper.
Known him since childhood.
Known him since childhood. Father was a political associate of the president when the president still was based in Chicago. And Chance has been to the White House maybe a couple of times.
Recently performed Sunday Candy at the tree lighting, mm-hmm. Which was another beautiful moment to sort of cap things off.
You know, I think when we look back at the music that came out of the Obama era, we will see the seeds of whatever Chance the Rapper is about to do in the next few years. So let's go out on Chance. Let's go out on All We Got. Chance the Rapper with Kanye West and the Chicago Children's Choir.
It was a dream. You cannot mess with the beat. This is like this many rings. Y'all know what I mean. This is for the kids of the king of all kings. This is the homiest thing. This is the beat that played under the word. This is the sheep that ain't like what it heard. This is officially first. This is the third.
This is a...
Thank you for listening to the New York Times podcast, a.k.a. Chapo Trop House. I have been your host, John Caramonica. Thank you to my guests, Wesley Morris and Joe Coscarelli. You can read Wesley writing about the relationship of President Barack Obama to popular culture at nytimes.com/arts. You can listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Email us your feelings about popular music in the Obama era or in the Trump era at podcast@nytimes.com. Subscribe to the podcast on Google Play, iTunes, anywhere you get your audio content. Our producer is the beloved Jocelyn Gonzalez. We'll be back next week.
We know we got it. Music's all we got.
Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.